Okay, so this is going to be a little bit different. I'm joined here by my wife. We're going to have a conversation about a really interesting topic, interlinears of Hebrew and Greek texts of the Bible. So we want to talk about this in the context of language learning, but I want to frame this whole discussion in the context of serving people and bearing people's burdens. So a lot of people, I think, want to believe that learning Hebrew and Greek has to be hard, and if you do anything to lift people's burdens when they are learning those languages, to make it slightly easier or even fun or enjoyable, then you're a bad teacher or whatever. And this is the attitude that we've seen over and over. I'm going to be going off of some comments on a Facebook group that has like 12,000 students or something, or 12,000 people who are interested in the biblical languages, nerdy biblical language majors. There's a lot of comments on there that are interesting, a lot of very strong opinions about interlinears. And so we'll be talking a little bit about some of those comments. One person on there says, some people seem to have this idea that language learning shouldn't be easy. Having an interlinear makes it easier, therefore interlinears are bad, like cheating. Language learning, to some, is about cramming noun and verb paradigms into your head and racking your brain to figure out what conjugation or word goes into whatever fill-in-the-blank exercise. Despite the fact that we all learn our first language to fluency only really by exposure, I can understand not allowing interlinears in a test situation and not using them for advanced lexical study, but that's not the same at all as saying they shouldn't be used by a beginner to pick up vocabulary, usage, etc. With that, let's talk about interlinears as a language learning tool. Before that, we should define what is an interlinear, because I think everyone has a different idea. How would you define an interlinear?
Well, what I picture when somebody tells me, oh, I have an interlinear of the Hebrew Bible, for example, is a really giant volume in which we have several lines of text. We have the Hebrew text on top, then we have a line of glosses, or maybe two lines of glosses that are giving a translation for each word, or maybe each morpheme. And we might have another line that's like a sort of code that's decoding the morphemes for you. What's second person, masculine, plural, etc. And you might have a translation line under that, or you might have a translation line in the margins. So when you say to me, oh, what do you think about interlinears? That's what I'm picturing. I'm picturing a big volume with tons of information laid out in front of me.
I think that's what a lot of people think. They're thinking of a big tome that has way more information than you actually need, and that's going to be distracting you from the text, and it's going to make the reading experience artificial. It's going to have all of this very strange kind of arrangement of the English glosses. So here's something I've learned, and this is a shocker to me, but in English we actually don't, to my knowledge, have any good, solid, useful interlinears. We have some weird ones, we have some awkward ones, but we don't have any that are actually useful for, I would say, learning a language, for advancing in your Hebrew studies, for example. Why is this? Well, one of the reasons is they don't seem to be trying to serve anyone with the information that they're providing in the English glosses. And so they're providing English glosses that are like backwards. And so because the language is backwards, it's following the Hebrew so woodenly, like even putting possessive suffixes at the end of a word, like instead of his hand his in English doesn't mean anything. If I say hand his, it doesn't serve me at a glance to understand what the Hebrew word says. It only gives me this weird kind of code that I have to figure out based on my knowledge of Hebrew pronominal suffixes, and that's not useful. So for some reason in English, we don't have a good, I've checked all the ones that I've found, and it's kind of sad. Now in French and Spanish and Portuguese, we have great interlinears so far that I've seen that are actually useful in this sense, but not in English. Anyway, so let's get back to this. Any other reasons people don't like interlinears?
Well, I think if we're talking about interlinears as I've described them, there's just a ton of information laid out in front of you, and I think it's a little bit overwhelming. If your goal is just to have like a nice reading experience and you're trying to practice your Hebrew or your Greek. So I think that visually they're a little bit too much if you are kind of forced to see all that information. Also, I think that it encourages that translation mindset where you're given direct English gloss for every word. And so it's kind of almost training you to be translating in English in your head, even if you don't want to, because you're seeing it right there under the word. And so I think that's another reason that I think that's another con to using an interlinear as described.
So your experience with a reader's Hebrew Bible was different. How would you describe the difference?
So a Hebrew reader's Bible has a cleaner text to it. The focus is the Hebrew text, but then it footnotes at the bottom those words that occur, say, 100 times or less. So the less frequently occurring vocabulary that you may not know, assuming you're at a certain level of Hebrew fluency, will be available to you, a little gloss at the bottom of the page. But it's not so distracting because the main focus, the main thing you're seeing is just Hebrew. So that for me was really helpful to feel immersed in the text. There wasn't all this information that I didn't need. You know, I don't really need to know, say, that halach means go, because, you know, that's pretty basic. So I'm not overwhelmed with unnecessary information. I just can get a timely help if I need it.
The drawback of that, I would say, is your eyes are having to jump a lot. They're having to search. And there's a high cost of energy and attention and loss of your momentum when you have to find a footnote number. And then it gives you a gloss. But here's the thing about these readers' Bibles. They give you a gloss, but that gloss is usually just like a translation of the root. So let's say you have in the Hebrew text, she walked, but in the footnote, it will just say
walk or go
or to walk.
It may give a couple of different senses for that word, but it depends. There's one addition.
But it won't say she walked is what I'm saying.
No, it won't translate it with all of the extra information of who did it. Now,
it'll give a generic.
There is an addition which includes a sort of a little code, which if you learn the code, you could see all that information.
Right, but that's
decoding. That was very helpful to me personally. But yeah, in general, those additions are expecting that you know enough Hebrew to understand the morphology of the verbs without too much trouble.
Right. So it doesn't really serve people in that sense by giving them a super convenient way of quickly knowing what something means in English. Give me a Hebrew verb. Already conjugated.
Vanochal.
Okay. If I have a footnote that just has
we ate,
that's going to be really useful. But if I have a footnote that says
first person, plural, vob consecutive, something or other.
Vob consecutive, imperfect, first person, common, plural, or 1CP or whatever. That is actually true, but it is not useful for making my language learning through reading large chunks of text enjoyable and convenient, smooth.
You're right back to decoding again.
You're right back to decoding and thinking in terms of just parsing analysis mentality, which isn't language learning, isn't language acquisition.
So I think we've got a kind of a big space between the reader's Hebrew editions, which are assuming a pretty high level of Hebrew, like you have a year or two, perhaps. And then we have the interlinear at the bottom, which kind of assumes you know nothing and gives you all the information, albeit maybe in coded form. But there's this big gap in between that, which would be nice if we could fill it so that we're not assuming a certain level before the text is useful, but we're also not forcing all that unnecessary information on someone who does know the basics.
So here's the assumption we're both operating under, is that you learn a language when you understand it. So that's a very simple, elegant theory that was put forward by Stephen Krashen. We've talked about this on the podcast before.
Comprehensible input.
Comprehensible input is the name of the theory. And so this is not something that most people assume in the field of language acquisition amongst seminarians. So most seminaries go completely contrary to that theory, and they don't even know about the theory. We, on the other hand, are trying to teach the biblical languages this way. Now, here's the thing. People who are learning with Aleph with Beth with us, they're eventually going to want to do something with the Bible. And we can't prevent them from going to the Bible too early.
I would guess that most students get excited after a verse or two, and they're like, oh my goodness, right. Let's open it up and see what it looks like. And then,
give it a shot.
Well, they might have a variety of reactions to that.
Yeah, depending on which book they open up, of course. We can't prevent people from going to the Bible. So what we want to do, and we don't necessarily want to prevent them, of course. We just want, but we can't exactly tell them, okay, don't go to the Psalms, don't do this, don't do that. They're going to go. So we want their experience to actually be useful in the language learning process, mm-hmm. right? So what kind of tool will those people benefit from when they do that, if they do it? And they will be doing it, and they have been doing it. We want to meet people where they're at. Once again, we want to serve people, lift their burdens. A solid tool where you're reading texts with training wheels. So I guess we want to talk about what are the training wheels within a text of Scripture and the original language that will help facilitate learning the language more and reinforcing what they already know as well. If you want to use another metaphor, what are the bowling lane bumpers? So I just want to talk about these metaphors too. Bowling lane bumpers, a lot of people would say, no, that those are for losers and it's anathema for
little kids.
The serious people, who the serious bowlers, right? But I would say that attitude is not an attitude of service, of bearing one another's burdens. It's more of that kind of militaristic, you know, you got to grin and bear it and white knuckle it through everything. Bumpers exist in bowling lanes to help people enjoy who aren't very good, but they can still play. They can mm-hmm. still have fun. That's not a bad thing. They can still have fun and they can still participate.
And they cannot get so demotivated that they stop practicing.
Exactly.
Because if you end up in the gutter every time, and for like three whole games, you might be like, why am I even here? And we don't want that to happen with people with the Bible. We want them. Yeah, you give up. We don't want people to give up and say, all right, I guess I'm not able to do this.
That kind of experience leaves a really bad scar on you. 4 hours of bowling and a gutter every time. You'll never want to do it again. And I think a lot of people in seminary are basically there. So they graduate and they're like, I never want to look at that stuff again. The people who are really hard-nosed about, oh, you got to do it the hard way, they're just setting everyone up for failure and for discouragement and then giving up. So that's kind of framing where we want to go with this. So if somebody is having an experience of Scripture that's going to edify them and help them learn the language by understanding the language, right? You learn a language when you understand it. What do we need?
Well, I think we need a tool that can appropriately bridge the gap that I was talking about between like a reader's edition style right. presentation and an interlinear style presentation. And we need to not assume a certain level, perhaps like the reader's edition does, so that we can bring people who are at a lower level along with us into the Scriptures, but also at the same time not force all of this information to their into their visual range. So that they're overwhelmed, so that they can't focus on the Hebrew, so that they're losing their place all the time, etc.
Right. We've published a video on our channel, Aleph with Beth. You can go check it out. It's called A Reader's Hebrew Bible for everyone, all the languages. And so what we're looking at there is basically the best of both worlds of a interlinear and a reader's Hebrew Bible. So what that means is, you're not seeing all the words glossed in front of you. What you're seeing is a Hebrew text in the app. And when you don't understand a word, you touch the word. And immediately a little gloss that actually translates that word in context, not just some kind of generic like to walk or to eat. It actually says he ate or she ate or they will eat. After appearing for a couple seconds, it disappears.
and you keep reading. So first of all, you don't have to go searching for a footnote. Second of all, you don't have to lose your momentum because it's not going to stick around and block your sight. It's not going to distract you. It's going to show up, give you the information you need right away, and then get out of the way. Then if you want to get more information, you could click it again and look at the analysis of it.
You could go to the lexicon entry for that. You could
look up the lexicon entry.
Particular word.
Exactly. Right. And you could read the whole BDB entry.
And you can decide to challenge yourself and try to understand it in context without looking at it. Or you can, you know, because it's not right in front of you offered without you asking for it, then you can sit there and think for a second, oh, this is familiar. Oh, I think I know this word until you remember. I think there's a lot of advantages to that over interlinear because then you're not being forced to see the answer to everything. And you can really test yourself and see where you're really at. And yet when you want a little bit of help, it's right there at your fingertips.
Yeah. And so that to me is really the gold standard of what we should be striving for to serve language learners and meet them where they're at and then have that as a tool to grow and grow and grow in their experience of the text beyond our videos. That's part of the thing is we want to anticipate where people are going to get to eventually as they complete our series of videos and learn more and more. They're going to get to a point where they really, really want to engage with the text. And if we don't give them something that's useful in that sense, they're going to get immediately discouraged because the Bible text, just cut and dry without any helps, is very discouraging, no matter how advanced you are. It doesn't matter if you've had 10 years of Hebrew. If you go to Job, you will be discouraged. You will just be like that beginner who's never bowled in their life, and they hit gutter balls every single time. If you go to Job, if you go to the Song of Songs, let's say you've only had 2 years of Hebrew, and you go to something like Joshua or Judges, and those are easier, but you're still going to be really discouraged. And so we want to find something for everyone where they won't be fully depressed and give up and feel like their whole journey was useless. Because that's the worst feeling, when you spent 2 years of your life learning vocabulary and internalizing everything, and then you go to read the text and you feel lost and you're like, well, what was the point? And this can encourage those people. So here's a question: why not spend energy instead on more simplified stories or a simplified Hebrew Bible? Why don't we just simplify the Hebrew Bible, abridge it for beginners?
Yeah, this is a discussion we've been having between ourselves. And I also think there's something to be said, though, for easing people into the realities of the original text. And that's what we're trying to do in our videos. We're exposing our students to pausal forms, to sometimes odd phrasings, but they know all the words so that hopefully they can get the idea more or less from the context. I think there's something to be said for letting people get their feet wet in the realities and hopefully helping ease them in so that it's not like throwing them into the deep end.
Mm-hmm. A lot of work to be done. Is there anything else we haven't mentioned?
I don't know if it would be important to talk about how having a code on the interlinear wouldn't really be helpful. I mean, we kind of touched on that a little bit, but having the gloss be just a code that tells you that the grammatical information isn't really ideal.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's so hard for people to get away from this idea of coding and in biblical language study.
Wanting to put the really precise meaning that may not have, for example, we have which in Hebrew might be four different morphemes, where in English we have one form. And so there's this desire to really precisely code the meaning of those Hebrew morphemes when we may not have an equivalent in English. So I understand that desire, but it's not really helpful for the reader who's just trying to understand the text, because it introduces a whole nother, basically a third language onto the table that they have to learn how to interpret, which is all these little number codes and stuff like that. And so it's not the sort of thing that you look at really fast and you're like, oh, I understand. these codes, this morphine dash, etc.
And there's a place for that, but it doesn't actually help you acquire the language. And I just want to be clear, like, we're not, we don't want to create this kind of a resource for people who are too lazy to learn Hebrew at all, right? That is not the point. I think that's a bad reason to create an interlinear. I think historically, that has been one of the reasons interlinears have been created. And not necessarily too lazy, but intimidated perhaps because of the poor, dysfunctional, broken pedagogy that people have used for so long to teach Hebrew and Greek. And because of that, they don't want to learn it. And they just want to use that interlinear and feel like they have a powerful insight into the original text. That is not what it should be for. It should be training wheels for somebody who is moving forward in their acquisition of the language, right?
Who will hopefully leave that interlinear behind.
They'll leave it increasingly behind.
Mm-hmm.
And who isn't just, that it hasn't even crossed the starting line. That's not what we want. So for instance, like what you mentioned, the precision about pronouns, like you. Well, so it doesn't really matter because if you're a beginner, it's one of the first things you should be acquiring is the different pronouns, their gender, their number. And so since that's such a common thing, it's such a basic thing, as a beginner, that should be something you don't really need help with anyway. You know, if you have a simple gloss like you, then that's fine. That's enough. Like there's this fine balance we want to strike where we're serving people as learners, not as I don't want to learn people, you know. I don't want to be bothered by actually attempting to learn the language in a natural way.
Yeah, I think that if you're approaching an interlinear not knowing any of the language and your intention is to try to get into the language without actually having to learn how it works, you're going to be really tempted to start committing some of those
exegetical fallacies
where you maybe put too much weight or emphasis on one particular morpheme and draw out all this meaning from it that maybe isn't really natural to the context or what's actually happening in that passage.
Yeah, and you could make some really silly mistakes, which we've seen.
Yeah, so
even with famous authors.
Do learn the language.
Yeah.